Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 20. In this episode, we will be discussing the Seanchan and their empire. Here with me is Jason.
We have a full house tonight. With us is Andrew, and of course, Gary's here with us. Ben's not here this week, so I'm going to take his place and I'll do the crazy theory. I do want to say one thing also. Someone said that we crashed the Game of Stones site. I'm so sorry if we did when we gave you our plug. I'm going to give you another plug. It's www.gostones.net. Accept our apology. We love your game. Hope it all the best.
How's it going, everybody? First off, in the news, we just wanted to say a happy belated birthday to Robert Jordan. And it's been a little over 1 year and a week since Knife of Dreams was released in the U.S. and in Canada.
Yeah. I'd also like to say happy birthday to my favorite author. And I remember what I was doing when I read Knife of Dreams. I got the book and I made it sit on my shelf for 2 weeks because I knew I was having surgery and I wanted something to do. So while I was at home resting. So did you guys read it right away?
Well, I bought it I don't think I was there the day that it came out, but I did buy it the week that it came out. And then I remember about 2 weeks later, Robert Jordan and his book signing tour, he came to Charlotte, which I live only 5 minutes out of. If anyone was there, you had to actually rebuy the book in order to get a ticket to go in to see Robert Jordan. As much as I loved Robert Jordan, I was extremely, extremely mad that you actually had to rebuy a $30 book to go in. So I didn't even eventually do it. But that night, instead of waiting in line for hours and hours, I finished The Knife of Dreams. So I think it was productive.
Yeah, I got my copy, I'm pretty sure, midnight the day that... or not midnight, but closing on the day technically before the book is released, you know, because they consider it essentially the next day at that point. And pretty sure I finished it within 48 hours. I just kind of tore through it with everything I could, and it was pretty interesting. And also, we have a MySpace page now for The Fourth Age. There you can listen to the podcasts that we've done so far, as well as send us voicemails. Since we have many fans from all over the world, and our number can only be accessed by those in the United States, this voicemail recorder is free to use by anybody. All you need to do is have yourself a mic. You can visit us at www.myspace.com/fourthage. That's fourth, the numeral four, T-H-A-G-E, and leave us a message.
Yeah, also one thing about, one really good thing about MySpace, you can also see our own personal MySpace pages, myself, Carrie, Andrew, and Ben. I'm going to try and convince them both to get the MySpace pages. But anyway, at least me and Carrie right now, today, we're on there also. Feel free to leave a message. If you send us friend requests, my only request is going to be that you put somewhere in there that it's not spam. Because if anyone that goes to MySpace knows, you get spam all the time. So we don't want to deny someone thinking that it's spam and oops, so we made a mistake and then have someone mad. So just let us know. We're fans of your podcast and we'll approve it. You will approve you no matter what. So go ahead and send us all your friend requests, leave comments, whatever you want to do. You can also listen. You can also listen to each of our podcast episodes through MySpace too, as well as DragonMount.com and iTunes.
Yep. Also, I just wanted to add, I was going to say the same thing as you because I normally don't accept people as friends that I don't know, but just mention that you listen to The Fourth Age and that you're a fan, and that's no problem. We also have our Ben number two, our editor. He's also added on there, and Jason, the webmaster of Dragonmount. So they're both there, and so you can kind of go in and see and check everybody's MySpace out. I guess from now, I'm just going to say that this is where the spoilers start. So we're going to get into some fan feedback, and we could rattle on off into some later books and different theories and whatnot. So if you haven't read them all, you might want to turn the podcast off now. Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week. Okay, I just first off wanted to take a moment to thank all of our fans. We really appreciate your support of the show, and we love hearing from all of you. Although I don't have the time to actually reply or put all of your emails and voicemails on the show, I read and listen to every single one of them. I never skip over any. It's especially astounding to find that we have fans all over the world, in places like Germany, Belgium, France, and Australia. It's great. We love hearing from you guys, especially when you're sending them in from other continents and stuff. It's great. Keep sending in all of your mail. We love it. Also, we had received mail about the discussion that Ben and I had in episode 18, which there was lots of because we realized that we made a big mistake about Matt's foxhead medallion. Basically, I guess what we were thinking was that they were like the lightning was shot was actually stayed in as opposed to it coming from the sky and not being stayed in. So Matt's foxhead medallion does work against both Sadar and Sadin. So there is no contradiction there. All is well. And I have a voicemail to play, and I would really like to, I'd like to thank Thorazor for sending this in. He's a fan of the show, and also he says something about his English not being great, but I just want to tell you, your English is amazing, so do not be self-conscious at all.
Hi there, this is Thorazor from Germany, and sorry for my English in advance. I have some thoughts about Rand kneeling before the Crystal Throne, or the part of the Sea Enchant Prophecies of the Dragon mentioning it. I don't think that it means Rand kneeling before the Empress of the Sea Enchant. Just because the Crystal Throne is generally mentioned as the equivalent to the Lion Throne of Endor, a title as well as a fancy piece of furniture, I think it more means the Crystal Throne Rand actually saw on the Grand Plaza in Redan when he went there. That sounds kind of tempting to guess that Rand might offer this as a symbol for his truce to Tuon when he really will approach her, knowing that she will be the next Empress and he will learn it from Matt or from someone else. And I guess when she will see it, she will instantly recognize it for what it is, as a Terran Grail that does something. Maybe not as a Terran Grail, but as a device she can use to do some things. She will know what to do with it, at least at the same degree as the Aes Sedai know what to do with the three silvery arches they used to for the acceptor testing. And maybe what this throne does is giving the one sitting on it the abilities to somehow sense or know if the one kneeling before it is speaking the truth. So Tuon can learn if Rand really means to hold the truth he's offering. Or maybe the throne uses some kind of compulsion to make the people before it unable to wish the one sitting on it any harm. Think of all the Sea Enchant that really mean to the bone this phrase, may she live forever. Think of Suroth, who had such a hard time even thinking of harming the Empress. This sounds like much more than mere faith that you have to a ruler, especially if you hear something like that from a dark friend to the bone, as Suroth is, and that in the very moment she's facing one of the Forsaken. So maybe Tuon will make feeling herself and the Sea Enchant safe with the truth doing this to Rand, making sure he won't harm her and the Sea Enchant, at least as long as the truth lasts. So I hope you see my point, and sorry that it wasn't more brief. Keep up the good work. Goodbye.
Thank you very much. It's so wonderful to hear someone, especially from Germany, and like Carrie said, your English is, you speak more English and better English than I can ever hope to speak of any other language. So I'll give you your props for that. I really do like your email. Not your email, but your voicemail. There's a lot of good thoughts in there. And the Crystal Throne and Redain, give that to Tuon. I totally agree. I It's good to hear interesting theories, maybe theories that no one else has thought of. And I'll give you credit for this. I don't think anyone else has thought of it in this light. So I love your theory. I don't really have many opinions to dissuade or convince people that it's right. It's really great. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I think the concept of Rand giving Tuan that particular throne could really work. It could cement the Shanshan to him. And then at the same time, would give Tuan what she would need to be essentially crowned the Shanshan Empress without having to go back over the ocean. So it sounds like an interesting thing. And yeah, I really like this idea and whatnot.
Yeah. I never ever put the connection like that Rand would possibly give Tuan the Crystal Throne. But I do know that, but see, I have the luxury of having the big white book. The Crystal Throne that the Empress sits on now is actually a Terran Grail. So your theory about maybe this other one using some sort of compulsion or for people who are before it and they can't think to do any harm to that, to the Empress or anything, because I can really see that, because I was just reading a part last night, and it said that, oh, it was when Padan Fain went before Turok. Do you remember that part in The Great Hunt? And he said that Turok said, "The Empress, may she live forever." And Fain had thought, wow, he really seems like he means that. He's not just saying it out of habit. It seemed like he genuinely meant that, may she live forever, you know? So possibly the one that she sits on now, since it is a Terran Grail, could use some form of bewilderment. Because I do know, I'm going to find it here in this book. Okay. The Crystal Throne itself is a great Terran Grail that causes anybody who approaches it to feel immense awe and wonder. Of course, only the reigning monarch is ever allowed to use it. It's basically all, that's the only thing that they say about it. So I can see maybe it does do that, but it could also form some sort of compulsion so nobody ever wants to harm. I don't know. That is a very good theory. As for Rand giving it to Tuan, maybe at that point, then they can have one over in Shanshan, or maybe something's going to happen to Shanshan, the empire itself, and maybe they can have one over on the Randland, the mainland.
one of the big things with the Shanshan is no one realizes that the person on the other side of the leash, actually can wield the One Power. It's kind of like a big black mark, and it's a big secret for the Shanshan. So if there's a secret that deep in their society, who's to say that their whole society isn't built on the same type of secret? And this, in fact, is that the people of the quote-unquote blood, and the reason why only one person's allowed to sit on the Crystal Throne is that fact right there, that the person that sits on the Crystal Throne can wield it because they can wield the One Power too.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Very true. That was a great voicemail. Thank you very much for sending that in to us.
This week, since Ben is not with us, we are going to do Ben's crazy theory. I'm going to do Ben's crazy theory. So let me read this. We received it from our MySpace page, which again is www.myspace.com/fourthage. I'm going to read it word for word. I have a crazy theory for Ben. What if, because of Perrin and Matt's alignment with the Shanshan, they both are fighting against Rand and his army against the Dark One's forces during Tarmon Gaiden? That was sent by Cherish through our MySpace page. Thank you. That does bring up a very interesting point. Both Perrin and Matt are both aligned with the Shanshan, and the thought is that maybe Rand might be also. But then I guess what this person is saying is perhaps there's not only two, one person against, you know, the good against the bad, but what if it's going to be Rand and the Aes Sedai against, you know, maybe Matt and Perrin aligned with the Shanshan against the Dark One's forces? What do you think of that? You think it's going to be maybe like three people fighting each other?
You know what's really funny? My husband for I have no idea why he thinks this, because I seem to think he's crazy, but sorry to the person who brought up this theory, but he thinks that Matt, that it's going to be Matt, that for some reason Matt is going to be against Rand, and he's going to have to fight him in order, you know, to get past to win the last battle. But I cannot see that. I can't see if Matt or Perrin, like, they need each other to fight this. That's the whole point of them, and I think the sparks, and they're seeing each other, and because the three of them need each other, or they cannot win. It just, the world needs them, and they all have to be not bonded as, you know, Aes Sedai and warders, but bonded as
Taviren.
Heroes, I guess. As, yeah. Taviren, yeah. Is, then that's the only way I think that they're going to be able to win. I don't think if one of them is on the wrong side, I can't see, or a different side, I can't see them winning.
Yeah, I don't know really what to think about this. I kind of guess I always envisioned it being multiple armies all kind of sieging Shai'al Ghul in the first place. So I can kind of see where it could turn out that some of them will end up fighting each other instead. But at the same time, you know, I think it's not exactly as amazingly likely. I also kind of think if any of them were going to be against Rand, I actually kind of see it being Perrin a little bit. Matt seems all the world for himself to be just a little more, I'm not crazy enough to go up against Rand. You know, he's still not even sure that his fox head works against, you know, Satan. So I kind of see Perrin being that way because he's more invested in both himself and Fael and, you know, the Two Rivers men. And I could sort of see that, but I really don't think it'll work that way.
I agree. As much as everyone loves Perrin, and I can't say that I don't also, but Perrin, out of all three of them, I really think that Perrin is the most selfish. And it seems kind of harsh to say that, but if you think about his actions and what he does and what he cares about, it's all about himself. It really is. So, while that doesn't further the theory that it would be the two of them against Rand, I think that possibly he may be the one that actually has to be convinced whose side is actually the right side.
Yeah, maybe. Definitely. So I guess we're going to lead into our Sean Chan discussion, which goes well with some of our feedback that we had. So that's good. Basically, most of the information is from the Big White Book, because that's really, I call it the Big White Book because that's what everybody seems to call it, but it's actually called The World of Robert Jordan's The Wheel of Time, for anybody that's wondering what I'm talking about. And it's this Big White Book that has all kinds of information, kind of has like a little bit more backstory maybe than what we've read, especially on the Sean Chan, than anything that we've read in the books. So that's why I think it's a good source of information. And I hadn't read it in years and years, so it was good to brush up on it. So I guess a lot of people I know were asking, I had some people post in the forum and also emails asking, like, what were the Sean Chan like before Luthair had gone over? They didn't say too much about their looks, because it is true that Sean Chan looked like everybody. I mean, they could be like black, white, oriental, like fair skinned. You know, it doesn't matter. Like, they just seem to be anybody. But they do, the pictures that they show in the book itself, they look oriental. So I would say that possibly the land of Sean Chan could very well, that could be kind of how, I don't know how they looked. They had a lot of the same class structure too. I don't know if you would have thought that, but the way that they were fighting and the ranking system and stuff, I mean, except for the blood and all that, but a lot of that was pretty similar. I know that basically the first nobility of the Empire of Sean Chan after Luthair Pendrag, his name is Luthair Pendrag, Mondwin. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but that was Hawkwing's son. And so he sailed over, and basically all of the blood were descendants from him and his followers. So then, centuries and centuries later, not sure centuries and centuries, it just says centuries, then they started raising people to the blood. Like if they had somebody that did some great feat or something that they liked, they would just, they would raise them.
The one thing, Carrie, thanks so much for the explanation. One thing about the Shanshan that I've noticed when I read the books is I tend to rush through those chapters, because I'll be quite honest, and I know a lot of Robert Jordan Wheel of Time fans love the Shanshan, and Robert Jordan likes them also, and there were some rumors that when he does his spinoff books that it's going to be something very similar to the Shanshan. I don't really like them, I'll be honest. I rush through those chapters, so I'm not the expert to ask about them. My third time rereading the books is what I'm doing now. I'm starting to appreciate the depth of characters and the depth of exactly what the civilization is about. I'm starting to appreciate that a little bit more now, but I'm only through the first book. So, Andrew, what do you think?
Well, the Shanshan as a people tend to be interesting. Like Carrie said earlier, they look like pretty much everyone else because they're really descended from everyone else. And it was odd getting into the structure of their honor system that guides how they interact with one another in the entire Saoter, the eyes upcast or eyes downcast, you know, concept was a little foreign at first, at least to my thinking, because I guess I get used to people either looking directly at you or not, even when people are talking to you. So it was kind of odd to think, well, how is it that these people do work with each other, you know, and, you know, why isn't it an affront to look somebody in the eyes if you're not on the same social level as them? And so it was an interesting thing. And I think a lot of that's broken up, considering a lot of the Shanshan royalty's dead now. Thanks, Semirog. I kind of had hopes that we would at one point in time see the Empress before she died, and, you know, my hopes were kind of shattered a little bit. It was just like, oh yeah, I flayed the Empress alive and, you know, coated her blood all over the Crystal Throne, and it was neat. And I was just like, wow, Semirog, you're nuts. And, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to see something at the end where, I don't know how we would have fitted in there, but where we would have got to meet the Empress, and now that's gone. So unless, I guess we could say Tuan will be the next Empress, so then we know her now. But
yeah, well, once she takes a new name,
interesting.
Yeah, well, one of the topics that we talked about at Dragon Con was, especially during that part, and these were complaints which I shot down, and thanks to myself for shooting them down. But anyway, I'll bring them up. And one of the things that people thought about that part, a lot of people were disappointed with that, and they really felt cheated, or kind of like it was fast food drive-through, that all of a sudden all this stuff happened right at the end of the last book, and things weren't really explained that well. So I'll just say a lot of Wheel of Time fans feel the same way, that they were kind of cheated. I don't feel cheated because I don't really like them anyway. So,
well, I was just a little disappointed. I don't think I'd say I was cheated at all. You know, it was a way to get rid of a good chunk of people who we would never have gotten to have met anyway. So, and it just reinforces how cruel Semirog is. You know, oh, I didn't like them, so I killed them all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It certainly does reinforce Semirog's character, and some crazy theories that some people think that Semirog got captured on purpose, but we were not going to talk about that this week.
Yeah, that could go on. On and on. I know it's... The Shanshan are so... They're so hard to tell because they're so different from our own. Like, to know, like you said, about your eyes downcast or what you're supposed to do. And it's very odd because people don't seem to have a problem with being owned, like slavery, which actually was in the Shanshan world, like their empire, if they had an empire. I don't think they actually had an empire, so to say, before. Basically, the way they explained it was everybody was at war with everybody else. They were always scheming and manipulating and basically the same thing that the Blood does now, except everybody did it. And they also had slavery, was a huge issue. It's odd because with the Shan-Chan, even people who are slaves can be sometimes considered higher up in rank than commoners or merchants, because some of like the high upper class slaves, I'm not sure there's Sojin, is that, do you know if that's how you pronounce
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
Sojin.
Yeah, you're pretty close.
They, even though they are slaves basically, because they're the upper servants, they outrank any free man or commoner. Like it doesn't matter. Even though they're slaves, they outrank them. So that just seems completely odd to me. And then basically once Luthier had, it took him, I think they said it took him 300 years to actually, the conquest took nearly 300 years, and then another 2 centuries before the last resistance was expunged and Luthier's descendants reigned the land totally in peace. So that was a long time. It's not like the land was always like this, but it has, but it's been like this now for quite a while. So, and that's all they're used to. That's all they know. Obviously, they don't know anything about what their land was like before. Like, what about before the Adam came into existence? You know, everybody that we know that Shan-Chan thinks that this is the way of life and it's the way it always has been. And we know that the people, like you said earlier, Jason, that are on the other end of the leash can channel as well. But mm-hmm. you wonder, like, when did that start? Which it says in this book. one of the things is that Shan-Chan, before Luthier came, it was ruled by Aes Sedai. So Aes Sedai ruled all of Shan-Chan. And basically they were all manipulative and they just were cutthroats and they were not good people. And since Luthier, being Hawkwing's son, obviously had a distrust and dislike for Aes Sedai, but because he saw the way that they treated everybody and the way that they were all scheming behind each other's backs, it just made him hate them. During the war, I guess, and Aes Sedai had actually brought him the first Adam, and she was trying to attempt to curry favor with him. And in the end, she ended up being enslaved just like everybody else. So that's kind of creepy. Aes Sedai brought that whole horrible nightmare of, I couldn't imagine being leashed. That was all brought on by an Aes Sedai just trying to up one on the rest of them.
And then eventually got leashed uh-huh. herself.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, I think, one of the worst fates. Like, if I was in, you know, the Wheel of Time world, I think that one of the things that I would most fear was if I was somebody that could channel and I would be leashed. Like, that would be the worst existence for me. I don't know mm-hmm. how you guys feel, but that would probably be the worst. Like, I'd rather be killed.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, and maybe one of the reasons why I don't like the storyline of the Shan-Chan so much is it does make a reader uncomfortable. It makes a reader uncomfortable reading about it and imagining themselves in that position. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I could imagine myself or anyone else that I knew in that position, and it just doesn't feel right. It feels wrong.
Yeah, it is. It's hard to read because you feel for the people on the other end and they don't even have, I mean, except for in the case where they come over and take the, like, Elaine and, or Egwene and women that are from our land. I say our land, like I'm in the books, but from the mainland. In the other instances, though, when it's all the Shan-Chan, they're used to it and they just put up with it. And you're thinking, what are you doing? Like, You have all this power and you let them collar you, which I know can happen, but all of them, they have no choice. It's just, they search them out and that's it.
Yeah.
From then on, they're a slave, but not even a slave like like the blood slaves. I mean, they're controlled. And, oh, that would be the worst.
Yeah, I don't have so much fear in the concept of the Adam, but that's because if an Adam were put on me, it would be the one that, you know, eventually I would get to control them too, because the male Adam was set up that eventually it would flow both ways, and it was really hard to use anyway, so... So there's kind of that in there. And then the other weird thing was that when you were talking about the exalted property, what flashed into my mind first was the Death Watch Guard. And out of all the Shanshan, mm-hmm. I think I love them the most.
Yeah.
They're the crazy soldiers. Their entire purpose is to live or die for the Empress or whoever she says, you know, live or die for. And just their fanatical devotion to Tuan just really, you know, inspires me, because even the Ogier gardeners are like, okay, we've got business to do. Let's go kill. And they're a force of nature almost. It just kind of really fascinated me.
Yeah, definitely.
Next week, and thanks everyone for sending us all the Shanshan information. If we get enough responses back, we'll certainly do a second show on them. I know we could probably talk about them for so long, but next week we'll be having a discussion on, as many people have noticed, I didn't do my Wheel of Time journal. The reason why is because I'm ending the Eye of the World next week, and then we're going to finish up the Eye of the World Wheel of Time journal. Next week is going to be completely dedicated to the Eye of the World. Send us your crazy theories, send us your thoughts, whatever you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yep. So don't forget that we love to hear from you. So please keep sending in those emails and voicemails. And now you can also send voicemails through our MySpace page. It's really easy. You just click on, it says actually send me an audio. And some people would be like, what is that? But that's what you click to send us a voicemail. All you need is a mic. So.
Yeah, and speaking of our MySpace page, that page is www.myspace.com/fourthage. That's four is in the number, T-H-A-G-E. And you can send us that, or as we said, voicemails there. You can also send us email at podcast@dragonmount.com or voicemails at 1-888-333-7690.
Also, for show number 22, we're going to plan in advance for show number 22. And the reason why is because show number 2 is we have a plan now is going to be our Asmodian show, or Asmo, as people like to call him. Send us your crazy thoughts, send us your crazy theories. We're going to try and keep it under 3-4 hours talking about Asmodian. Not really, but honestly, though, send us your Asmodian theories. The best ones, I mean, we're going to pick the best ones, and we're going to talk about it for the whole show. So send some crazy theories to Ben, and that's what we'll talk about. Thanks, everyone, for listening this week. Have a great week.
Blessed be you all in the light.
And walk in the light, because we're missing Ben this week.
Take care, everybody.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com.